So we are still talking about family. For the last couple of weeks, we've been talking in the classic love chapter, 1 Corinthians 13. And we read verses from Paul, the first three verses of 1 Corinthians 13, just challenge us with how important love is. And that if we don't have love but have everything else, we've still missed it. And he goes through this kind of this line of, if I can do this and I do this and I do this, but I don't have love, I'm nothing, I'm a resounding gong, I've gained nothing, and makes some pretty amazing statements, which if those were on their own, we could maybe just say, well, he's just kind of overstating it to make a point. But then we read in 1 John, hey, you want to know if you've passed from death to life? Do you want to know if you're saved? Do you want to know if you're a follower of Christ or not? Then you better love. Like, that's how you know. 1 John says that. That's a terrible verse. I mean, it's scary. If you have passed from death to life, then you love. And if you're not loving, then you're still in death. Like, and that says that in there. I like to skip over verses like that because they make me nervous, right? I'm not saying you should do that. So we read from different authors in the New Testament that love is so important. And kind of the connector point of why this is so important, he goes on next, and that's what we're doing today, is defining love. But the connection point, because if you think of love as just kind of this touchy-feely or I really, really like you and kind of that, like that's what love is, kind of what most of us would think of love is, it's going to be bizarre. It's not going to make any sense at all. But when we see how the Bible in 1 Corinthians 13, how Paul defines love, and it's defined that way in other places, but it's all wrapped up neatly here. When we see it defined like that, you're going to go, oh, well, who can do that? Exactly. It's impossible. And that's why, because God is love, when we have love in us and working through us, we have the supernatural character of God. And that's what the point that they're getting at is, here's what love looks like, here's what it does, and it's not possible in your flesh. It's not possible to love like that. And so last time we talked about the four loves. We'll just review that really quick. In the Greek language, in our language, there's one word for love. We say we love. I love Kit Kats. I love Slim Jims. I love my kitty. I love my new job. I love my wife of 20 years. I love my parents. I love the color blue, right? Bizarre if that's the same word, right? This commitment that I've got to the two flesh becoming one, my wife, my helpmate, the one who shares everything in life with me, the thing that we experience between one another, that kind of love is the same thing for a Slim Jim? Really? And yet in our English, it's the same word. In the Greek and in a lot of our other languages, they would never use those same kind of words. But in English, I guess we've got silly words, but we decided to stop at love. We're not going to have a bunch. We've got a bunch of silly words that are just goofy in the English language. But when they got to love, they're like, yeah, one's good. So I don't know why we stopped at one, but it doesn't do us any advantages. So last time we ran through these real quick. And in the Greek language, there's four different words for love. When they talk about eros love, that's the, oh, I'm in love, right? You see the boy and your heart beats faster and call it romantic love. We get the word from eros, we get the word erotic, right? Erotica, you know, stuff you don't talk about in church, right? And all the kind of the sexual perversion stuff is based on that. It's not a bad love. It's meant to be expressed in marriage. But it's our hormones. It's our sweaty palms. It's what goes on when the other loves are working well. It's a fleshly love, right? Exactly. Storge, that one's not used hardly at all. A lot of people will talk about the three loves. I've got a quote from Chip Ingram later, and he talks about three loves. Storge is family love, and it's more of like a duty, honor. Like, remember the old Beach Boys song, Be True to Your School, way back in the day? Like, kind of this, kind of like loyalty to family, to community, you know, kind of like when little kids love their grandma or great-grandma, but they don't really know them that well. Maybe they live in a different state or whatever. Or maybe grandma's just not that nice. Like, that would never happen in our family, but because our grandmas are really nice. But you know what I mean? But Would they ever want something to happen to grandma? No, no, we love grandma. But it might not be the same kind of touchy-feely love. So storge is kind of one of those loves that it's more kind of duty, honor, but and it's real and it's legitimate. Then phileo, now that's the big ticket. That's the one that gets all the grand, other than Eros, because every popular song and movie is about, like, oh, we'll watch movies, and we're pretty selective with what we watch. We also use VidAngel, a little plug for that, $7.99 a month, and you can filter quite a few movies, get the words, cuss words and sex scenes and some of the violence out of there. Or we also use ClearPlay, which is another one, and it can filter some of that stuff out. So even with that, we're still pretty cautious. But we'll watch these movies, and the classic love storyline, you know, this girl was just, we've been with this guy for forever, we're going to be married. Well, then some hero shows up or whatever, and she's like, I love him, right? And it all happens, and finally, because my kids have been in the background when we're doing marriage counseling and, you know, like pre-marriage counseling, and just have heard this over and over and over and over and over again. Finally, Taylor's very logical, very methodical. Looks at me, he's like, Dad, she can't be in love with him. She doesn't even know him. I'm like, dude, exactly. That's what I'm saying. But you tell that, you go outside of these walls and you say that to anybody, they're like, what do you mean that can't happen? My word. And we have marriages that are just disintegrating by the thousands, and we've got relationships that can't stay together because we think that's what love is. That, oh, I can see you and just, you're the one, right? I'm just all fluffy inside. And what, do you know what I mean? Like, it's just these combinations of these other words. And that's not the kind of love that lasts. Those aren't bad loves. They're just meant to be used in the right place. So phileo love, like Eros love, is love of the body. It's hormones, it's sweaty palms and glands and butterflies in your tummy. Phileo love is a love of the soul. And so I gave the example last time. Like, I love Slim Jims. I love, you know, chicken livers. I really do. I just have to wait till the family leaves. Yeah, because they don't like those. And so, like, there's a few things that I'm just like, ooh, that's so good. And that's kind of like Eros. And I did this last time. I said, but coffee. And the whole place went, oh. I'm like, exactly. You understand. It's still a food or, you know, or whatever. But it has more than just a physical connection. There's an emotional connection with it. Like, for you, it might be hot chocolate, or for you, it might be, you know, just whatever, breakfast in bed, you know. It's more than just, I'm hungry and I want to eat. What is breakfast in bed? Oh, it signifies someone's taking care of me. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's this emotional connection with it. And that's what phileo love is. It's a love of the soul. And it's best friend love. And it's, and all of these are present in marriage, honestly. It's just that you have to have agape in order for things to work well. So agape is the one that 1 Corinthians 13 talks about. But phileo is this, phileo is, you can substitute phileo with, I really, 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 really like. And if it would be your best friend, it is also your spouse. Some days, that's where some days, here's what people don't get. If you've got agape love, which you should have in your marriage, phileo love can disappear one day, and your marriage is just as strong and just as vibrant as it was the day that that disappeared. It won't stay disappeared long, because you've made a commitment, and it comes back again. But this, there's days when, I just can't wait to be with you, babe. I'm going to be home in like 5 minutes. Love you more, right? That's phileo love. It's the love of the soul. And there's other days like, oh, you're home. People that don't know about agape love freak out. I'm telling you, we've done enough marriage counseling now that they freak out when you talk like that. I just always want to love him. A fat chance. You're human. You're not going to love him like that all the time. You're going to love him agape all the time. Sacrificial, giving love. We're going to talk about that in just a second. But I just wanted to clarify what Bible love is not. Because a lot of times people read 1 Corinthians 13 or they read these other verses about love. And they overlay that definition, one of these other, usually a phileo, over what the Bible is saying. And that's not what the Bible's saying at all. And we learned last time that there are verses where God says he phileos us. And Jesus God phileoed Jesus, and Jesus phileoed the disciples. So that's not a bad thing. But there's a higher love than that. Eros, storge, and phileo are all selfish loves. Selfish by definition, not selfish because they're evil. You love your best friend because you guys like to do stuff together. And it's about you. Like, it's about them as well, but it's really about you. Like, if, like, oh, man, I used to go snowboarding with my buddies. And so, like, if all of a sudden they would just not snowboard anymore, it's not that I wouldn't like them anymore, but some of that would diminish. Like, we would have less connection. And, like, Eros, oh, my gosh, that is an entirely self, like, physical, not to be, we want to keep it under PG-13 here, but, you know, like, all that love wants to do is get satisfied. Just leave it at that, right? It wants gratification. It's not a giving love at all. It's a taking love. Honestly, so is phileo. And really, you're not going to have a long-lasting friendship based just on phileo. But that's what makes things vibrant and wonderful. Honestly, a marriage only with agape love and with no phileo love is going to be not really fun. Phileo is the love of the soul, man. It's walking the sunsets together. It can be romantic love, but it's this, we just enjoy each other. It's friendship love. It's, yeah, this is great. And if you take that kind of love and you say the Bible, where the Bible tells us to love like God loved, and you place phileo in there, you're going to have this idea that church is all, like, if it's done right, it's all touchy-feely, and we're just, oh, kumbaya, right? And there is some of that. Jesus phileoed the disciples. There is that. But that's not what the challenge is. So we got, just barely got into it. We finished this last time. This is agape here. This is how we know what agape is. The last, you see that last one there? Sorry if you didn't read that. Agape is how you pronounce that. And that's the word most often used. And 1 John 3:16 says this. This is how we know what agape is. Jesus laid down his life for us. Jesus didn't say, dude, this is going to be so fun. Oh, man, we're going to make such great memories together. There's going to be this cross. And you know, it's not that kind of love. It's I lay my life willingly down for you. But then I pray in the garden, God, if there's any other way, take this cup from me. That's agape love. I don't want to do this. Well, if you really love someone, you'd want to. Come on. You are either idealistic or clueless. There's going to be a lot of times you don't want to do the right thing. You don't want to be selfless. Unless you guys are all like superheroes. I don't know, you're all kind of looking at me like, I don't know if that's true. It's true because we're selfish creatures. And agape love is selfless. We ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. And you guys all know 1 John 3:16, right? For God so loved the world. Guess what kind of love you think is there out of those four? It's agape. For God so agape the world that he gave. For God so loved that he gave. Stay with me. For God so loved that he gave. In youth group, remember that from way back in the day, Morgan, when you were in youth group like 30 years ago? Love equals give. I remember, this is burned into my memory, Morgan. You were there with a friend of yours from the valley, and we went through some of this stuff, and your eyes were about this big. And when we got done with this love stuff, she's like, so many people don't know this. And it was one of the kind of starts. We hadn't really done a lot of pre-marriage counseling and stuff like that yet, or relationship counseling. But I just remember you and your friend talking to Marnie and I after youth, and you're like, people don't know this. And then you guys were like listing off names, like so-and-so needs to hear this, and they need to hear this. Like this isn't, why do we not know this? And it's so true, because if you're building your life on phileo love even, or eros love, oh, it's romantic, yeah, whatever, that goes away. It's kind of like heartburn. Like, you know, it's really prominent for a minute. I'm just saying that this stuff is really transitory. Just like your emotions. Your emotions are great when they're in their proper place. They're meant to, they bring so much. Can you imagine an emotionless life? Oh, excited. Oh, I'm sad. It's like, dumb. Like, our emotions bring vibrancy to our life, but when they're in the wrong order, or when they're in charge, or when they're out of control, it's horrible. Just like these other loves. They're great when they're in the right place. When they're out of place, we're trying to build something on a foundation that doesn't exist. Okay? So the Bible tells us that's what agape love is. It's a self-giving love. This is still all review from last time, but it's a self-giving love that gives without demanding or expecting repayment. Think about this for a second. It's a love so great that it can be given to the unlovable or unappealing. It's a love that loves even when it's rejected. It doesn't need anything to love, okay? Agape love gives and loves because it wants to. It does not demand or expect repayment from the love given. It gives because it loves. It does not love in order to receive. It's this selfless giving. It's this selfless placing of the other person above me. This selfless putting your needs above my needs. And let me tell you, boys and girls, that's what is going to make relationships thrive. Can you imagine if we started doing this more often? Can you imagine if, and that's the love that we're called to treat one another with. Now, if you're reading your Bible and you're like, we're supposed to love, and God is love, and he's just touchy-feely. No, God sacrifices his son for us. God loves when it costs him something. Agape love always costs you something. The other three loves might cost you something, but usually it's to receive. Agape love is to give. I'm just redoing this over and over again because we have to understand this. Or we're going to have just a warped view of what Christian love is to be all about. There is Christian phileo love, absolutely. But agape love is such a higher love, and that's mostly what we're called to do. Chip Ingram has this, in the actual quote it said two, because he only teaches the three loves. I changed it to three because we're talking about four, if my math is right. Agape energizes the other three kinds of love. The other three kinds of love are fantastic. They're amazing. Agape is what keeps feeding them. Over and over, I might have mentioned this last week or a couple weeks ago. Over and over and over and over and over again, we either hear stories on the radio on Focus on the Family or Family Life Today, or we read them in our marriage counseling books, or we hear stories in our own lives of people that, I mean, they've signed the dotted line. The divorce papers are already signed. I hate that person. I hate him. I hate her. I can't stand to be, we're done. Over and over, not one or two or a hundred, but thousands of stories, especially Family Life Today with their weekend retreat that they do, stories where they're just done. And they'll get together and they'll say, all right, well, you're done anyways, so give us a month. I can't stand to be around them. Tell you what, just give us a month. Do what we say, and if not, then we'll refund your money or we'll buy you lunch or whatever. Like, to talk them into doing it. And what they do is they start agape loving the other person, this person that they now hate. And so they start treating them selflessly. They start bringing them coffee. They start doing the things that you probably did when you were dating. You see, you're all caught up in the emotions of it, so you agape love people because you want to, because you're all jazzed up about it, because it makes you feel tingly. As soon as the tingles go away, there's no more agape love because you haven't made, you maybe don't know about that. You don't know about, it's not fair. I shouldn't have to do that. Shh. Agape love never says it's not fair because often it's not fair. I said it a few weeks ago. If you want fair, play a board game. If you want good relationships, love someone with agape love, right? And so they'll do that for a month. They'll start serving one another. They hate it. It's miserable. But about day 20, they're like, man, that's a nice shirt. I just didn't really notice before that, wow, I like how her hair, you know, day 25, I never noticed how much I appreciate his, whatever, his care for the kids or whatever, you know, and by day 30, they're going, I don't know how to tell them this, but I don't really want to go through with this, but we've already signed the paper. We've heard these stories over and over and over. And why is that? It's because the first three loves aren't self-sustaining. They're selfish. There's no energy to them. They can't live on their own. But agape love that gives and serves energizes those other ones. And they start going, oh, they don't know the words for it, but I've phileos coming in my heart now. Like, they start wanting to engage on that level, and even eros, right? Like, their body and emotions begin to respond to this divine love that is self-sacrificing. We're wired that way. Can you imagine if the Church of God actually just did what God said? And I think sometimes it's because we don't know. It's just ignorance. We don't even know that that's what love really means. We think love is touchy-feely kumbaya. And that is one of the loves, but that's not the love that God's talking about. He's talking about sacrifice. Well, I like sitting here. I don't want to give them my seat. Be quiet and sit somewhere else. Well, I served last time. I don't want to do the dishes or teach Sunday school. It does, like, serve, love, give. Can you imagine if we treated each other with that agape kind of love? It just fosters those other kind of loves. We would start having incredible relationships. All right. 1 Corinthians 3:4, this is the next verse where we start peeling apart what love is. Love is patient. Love is kind. He says that you really need this. And then we took some time to define which love he's talking about. He's talking about agape is patient. Agape is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. Last time we talked about, there's two words that says love is. Love is two things, and then it's going to tell us love is not 8 more things. So love is patient. What is patience? Some versions of your Bibles will say long suffering, patience, long suffering. So that's there's two components of patience here. The first one we're going to talk about is long suffering. It's the capacity to accept or tolerate delay, trouble, or suffering without getting angry or upset. So previous to this definition here, if I would have said, do you love people well? You'd be like, yeah. Now if I put this definition in there, what would your answer remain the same? The love that you have in your life, is it patient? Is it long-suffering? Does it put up with others well? This quote says, the idea of the word is that it takes a long time before fuming and breaking into flames. This is where we ended last time. We might compare the word to trying to light a fire with wet wood. Anyone ever tried to get a campfire going with wet wood? It just doesn't work. So I shared a couple stories last time. We won't do that again this time. But it's frustrating to the fire starter, but it's pretty peaceful to the wood, right? They're like, it doesn't matter. And that's this idea of patience in your life, is that it doesn't matter what kind of flames are going on around me and what kind of sparks you're throwing at me. You guys ever been in a relationship where you got some sparks flying at you? Nobody? Okay. All right. Just saying. They're out there. Patience makes you like wet wood. It doesn't ignore that there's sparks coming, but you don't have to react to them. So, moving on from there, we'll talk about patience a little bit more. 2 Peter 3:9, and I use the King James Version of this because I love the word that they use in there. You see, all of this love, God is love. So as we're defining these things, God is these things. And so it shows us that. It says that love is patient, or love is long-suffering. The Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but is long-suffering. Say long-suffering. Long-suffering, or suffers long, to us, love the King James here, to usward. not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. God is long-suffering of us. What does that mean? It means that you suffer a long time. Like, if you want to really just know what does it really mean in the Greek? It means you suffer a long time. What are you suffering? What is God suffering here? He's wanting us to come to salvation. So what is God suffering while he waits for that to happen? Well, what needs to happen in order for me to get saved? I need to break my pride and say, God, I need you. So he suffers my pride, suffers my arrogance, suffers my unbelief, suffers my, what do you want to call it, dullness, you know, just don't get it. Suffers my impatience at him, suffers my, here's a good one, suffers my misreading a situation and blaming God for things that aren't really his fault, and misreading an interpretation of something that God's trying to teach me something, and I blame him, or I call it something that it's not. Has anyone been ever, raise your hand if you've ever been misunderstood. If you're not raising your hand, I don't know. Maybe you've never had a conversation. I don't know. How does it make you feel when you get misunderstood? Frustrated? Yep. Yep. It's hurtful sometimes. It's just like, you're like, that's not what I meant. And often when you're misunderstood, the other person is reacting badly, you know, emotionally. Like they're mad or they're hurt or whatever. And you're like, I don't know how many times where I've unintentionally hurt somebody by something I've said. That's a horrible feeling. And then you're like, how do I remedy this? Like, that's not what I meant at all, but that's what came across. And unfortunately, if you stand up and speak a lot, like that happens. And so that's hard. That's hard to deal with. But God suffers our misinterpretation of what he says and does. And so the Bible calls us to be long-suffering. So if God is long-suffering of us, he calls us to be long-suffering of others. So this kind of love that we have for one another, it suffers with misinterpretations. It suffers with you having a bad day and being a little grumbly at me. It's unfairly. That's not fair for me, right? I didn't do anything. Anyone ever get snapped at for no reason that's not your fault? You walk in and boss is having a bad day or dad got out on the wrong side of bed, right? And you're just immediate reaction, what are you raising your hand for? My daughter was not impressed with me the last couple days. Dad's been a little grumbly. And you have this immediate reaction of, that's not fair. And like, what did I do? And what love does is it suffers that long. And actually, in the original word, it means long to forever, like to the end. That's disheartening. And if you're getting what I'm saying, there should be a little bit of sagging in your spirit right now going, how do we do that? Right? It takes the power of the Holy Spirit to love like that. But you start loving like that and the Spirit starts energizing that. See, that's the cool thing about God. You make the decision, God energizes what he commands. He gives grace for what he commands you to do. So if you don't let your sagging, disappointed spirit go, I could never do that. Like if you get beyond that and go, I'm going to take steps to do that. All right, God, this week, I'm going to see where I can suffer longer, right? You have to help me. God will start doing that. He'll start energizing that in you. He'll start shaping your character to match what he's commanded you to do. Yeah? Exactly. Suffers long. Ephesians 4, 1 and 2, Paul is writing, he says, as a prisoner of the Lord, then, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you've received. That's written to you guys. Be completely humble and gentle. Be what? Patient. Patient. Bearing with one another and in love. Be long-suffering. Bearing with one another. You know what a word that we would say today? Put up with. And that sounds like a bad thing. And here, love is the highest command of God, and he's calling us to do that. Put up with it. Boy, so much of Christian love is lost on our idea of fairness. Oh, I shouldn't have to. No, you're called to be a slave of Christ. I want you guys to grow up in faith. I'm just going to say, it's not fair. You have not come into this walk with Christ to get all your needs met and feel good about every little thing. Now, he does meet all of our needs, but we're called first to be a slave of Christ. We're called first to be obedient. We're called first to do that because he knows he needs to get that in order for the rest of our life to look like it's supposed to. Then he can bless us. Then he can, because then our priorities are right and we won't misuse the authority and blessing and stuff that he gives us. So he calls us to bear with one another. You know how we would use that word today? Because I've done construction. If I start tearing a wall out, what's one of the first things I need to know? Say I tear that wall out right there. What's one of the first things I need to know about that wall? Is it a load-bearing wall? Well, where's the electric? It's good to know, too. Exactly. But I also want to know, is the roof going to fall down on my head when I take this wall out? And that's kind of the idea behind this bearing with one another. I'm going to bear with the injustice that you're shoveling at me right now. And I'm going to hold that up with the power of Christ in me, because you're, oh boy, you're just, man, you're just pouring it on me. And I'm not saying be a doormat. Love sets boundaries as well. But just with that idea aside, just that in normal, healthy relationships that, man, you're blaming me for this, and you're giving me attitude today. Like, I can do a couple things. I can walk away and disappear forever. I can walk away temporarily. I can bear with that and stay committed and stay in this relationship, whether that's a friend, whether it's a marriage, whether it's a child, whether it's a brother, like a physical brother, you know, biological brother, sister, you know, family split over the most horrible things. That's what that kind of love looks like. Look at this. Exercising patience makes some people resentful, bitter, cynical, and angry. Hold on before we read ahead. So I'm telling you to bear with stuff. If we don't do this with the power of Christ, that's what happens in your heart. Right? If you try to agape love in your flesh, that's what's going to happen. Because most of the time that we're bearing with one another, whether it's a spouse, a best friend, a girlfriend, a boss, you know, we're called to love. We're called to be people of love. It's a lot different than touchy-feely love that people think Christianity is, isn't it? This is completely different. Despite all that will happen to you in life, all the letdowns, disappointments, etc., if you have love, you can avoid the misery caused when one becomes soured with imperfect people. Like it was Charles Spurgeon said, the bride of Christ is some kind of word and imperfect, whatever. But she's married to one who is perfect. So we should treat the bride of Christ like that person. So we want to treat one another with that kind of love and respect, even though we often don't deserve that kind of love and respect. Come on. Second part of patience. So the first kind of facet of patience is this idea of bearing with, putting up with you. That sounds so negative, but that's what the word means. And it means it not in a condescending way. It means we're all imperfect, but we're all going to love well, and we're going to put up with each other, and we're going to give grace. We're going to give space for you to fail and have a bad day. But there's a second side to love. I think this is going to help some people if I can finish this up real quick. Love is patient. It means love gives time. Love gives time. And it's what kind of the classical definition of what you think of as patience. I'm not so in a hurry, right? I mean, how many of you just are on like this definition of patience, kind of the not in a rush, you know, how many feel like you're on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 is like nailing it, 1 is more like me, not patient at all. Like, how many would be like an 8, 9, or 10, just kind of naturally on the patient scale? You're pretty good at being patient. A couple of you? Some personalities, you know, you're just phlegmatic personality like my dad. You're just naturally pretty patient. Life moves at one pace, and you're like, oh, I can't do nothing about it anyways. Like, yep. 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 Super slow. Just no rush. Yep, get there with me, you know, kind of Mr. Magoo, hey, right? Half of you aren't old enough to remember Mr. Magoo. But this definition of love gives time. If I'm loving, I don't expect everyone to work on my timeline. How many of our altercations and our frustrations are... the root of them is you've got a timeline and other people. The world isn't revolving around you correctly. How dare it? We laugh. It's painful stuff. If you laugh, it helps it hurt less. I think there's going to be deliverance. There's also going to be healing for wounded hearts after a message like this. But that's what I'm saying. Let's keep moving or we're going to get in a wrong spot here. Expectations. This word is so huge. And I think this can help you today. This is like help the people with emotional baggage today, right? We started out with the depression and anger thing kind of earlier. This was a revelation to me. I want you to track with me. Think of something right now that most often causes you to be impatient. Maybe people are driving what you would consider to be dumbly, or the checkout line at Walmart. Oh man, that's a great one, right? Or maybe your wife ran into the store for one thing, which, I mean, if you know, just that's just lies. You're never going in for one thing. Our kids now are involved. They're like, Mom, you might as well just call that a lie. It just is. You're not. It's not truthful. No, I am. I really am. I'm going. She'll come out with a bag. Kids are like, yep, just a pathological liar. Inability. Like, you know what I mean? So whatever it is that causes you to most often be, come on, impatient. Anyone ever use a computer? Updating. Right? Let's talk about this word. Probably 90% of your, right? That's what we're going to call it. 90% of your impatience comes from a set of unmet expectations. Why are you when you sit down at the computer and it decides that now it's going to do its updates? Are you angry that your computer is going to run better? Well, no. Are you upset that it's going through its own process and you're not involved? No, let it do what it needs to do. Are you mad that it, you know, like you could go through this whole list of things and it's really a good thing for it to update. What are you mad about? I had an expectation that I was going to sit down and 5 minutes from now, this actually happened to me yesterday. I was trying to print out and I did not pass the test very well, right? We're getting ready to go to Jorgensen's and I wanted to print out my message so I could preach last night at Jorgensen's and my computer won't connect to the printer. What's going on when you get in the line up at Teal's and there's four people in front of you and the lady right in front of you has got the coupon book with 419 coupons, which we're coupon people, so that probably wouldn't even bother me. But you know what I mean? Like, why are you impatient? It's because you went in that with a set of expectations. You painted a picture in your mind, either from past experiences, you do this little subconscious, you don't even know you're doing it, but mentally, like, your brain's doing all these calculations all the time. I can know without even looking that I'm right up against these chairs now. Like, I was looking at John the whole time. Like, because your brain's always calculating distance and reading people and knowing things. And so you walk into the store and you've got this idea. It's probably going to be about 4 minutes to go through the checkout line. You're thinking about, I'll make supper when I get home and I got to run over here first. And now you get in the line and there's four people and, whoa, Papa Bear's coming out. What's going on here? Are we mad that people are buying groceries? Well, of course not. We don't want anyone to starve to death. Are we upset that, you know, they're in this line? Well, I don't know. It doesn't really matter. We're angry that some expectation that I had of how fast this was going to go and what the process was going to be like is not happening in my mind. And it starts in my mind. So what if, just crazy thought here, just hang on with me. What if we changed the story? You can do that. You can do that. What if you walked into the store and said, I'm going to have a God encounter today. Instead of, I'm going to get through, you know, whatever. And now it takes 15 minutes in the line and you're like, wow, thanks for giving me this extra time to pray. And that's not so far-fetched. Like, just process through it. Just, like, hush your emotions that are all riled up because you've been thinking about the grocery store or the traffic line or your wife going in to get one thing in the store or whatever it is. If you change the narrative beforehand, all of a sudden it's not that big a deal, is it? Do we get angry because our two-year-olds are not this tall? Why are you not growing? No, we have a clear expectation of this is going to take 12 or 14 years. Do you see what I mean? Do we have an expectation? Do we get angry that the TV show is not done at 8:20? Well, no. It's an hour-long show. See, it's funny the things we get mad at. It's because we've got a narrative in our mind of how this is going to play out. And in order for you to engage with the presence and peace of God, we need to change the story. We need to say, I don't have to be in control of this. I don't have to paint the picture here. And I think that can give you some freedom in this. The fiery weeds of impatience grow quickly in the fertile ground of our own unmet expectations. You get riled up when it didn't go like you thought it was going to go. Romans 15:5 says this, may the God who gives endurance, some versions say patience, that's what it's talking about here, long-suffering. May the God who gives endurance and encouragement give you the, look at this, the same attitude of mind toward each other. Wait, we're talking about the God that gives patience. Why would the God that gives me patience talk about the attitude of my mind? Because that's where impatience starts, is in my mind and in my expectations. Try to finish up here real quick. Here's the next step of this. Our lack of patience shows up as an attempt to control a situation or a person. All right? Wife's not coming out. Better text. Again. Oh, we must have got lost in there. Hope she notes my cynicism. Right? What am I trying to do? I'm trying to control the situation because it's not matching up with the story that's in my head. Okay, tractor driving down the road. I am important. You are not. We would never say that, but that's what you're saying. I've got somewhere to be. What am I trying to do with the horn? I'm trying to assert control. Get you to move over. Get out of the way. Hurry up. Get mad. Give me finger signals. Whatever. Just, I want this situation to change. You're not getting ready fast enough at my house. I mean, this is a hypothetical. This would never happen. But come on! What am I trying to do now? I'm trying to control the situation with my anger and my louder voice. If my voice gets louder, I can control you better with that. And Paul is saying, that's not love. Because love gives time. That's not saying that love doesn't have a schedule. It's not saying we just can't ever get anywhere, right, Stan? It's saying that there's a happy medium the way we think you should, or in the timeline that we think we should. Patience is about really giving up control. Whew, exactly. If you got that, you went, ooh. Isn't this Christian life about surrender? You see, that's why they can make these audacious statements about if you don't have love, you don't have anything. And these statements of love God with all your heart, soul, mind, love your neighbor as yourself, that's every commandment. I don't really think that, even to me, it seems crazy. But then when you start looking at what love really is, what agape love really is, I can't be patient if I'm not yielded and surrendered and placing you above myself and placing God first. Oh, well, I see then how that, do you get it? Do you see how that starts taking every area of your life? And we just made it through one word, made it through patience today. It took us 2 weeks to make it through patience. Wow, this is going to be a slow process. It's worth it. It's worth it. Because what are we doing here? We're making disciples of Christ. You can go to church anywhere. We want to be maturing disciples of Christ. We want to be bearing much fruit. Amen?